Welcome to everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. And as everyone is still coming in, feel free to find you a seat. Again, I just want to admonish everyone to silence their cell phones. First, let me just say welcome to everyone. I feel like y'all should all be feeling really enthused right now after that luncheon. Is that all right? I am feeling extremely empowered, and I can definitely tell you that after this, I will be spending a lot of time this weekend thinking about my own story and how I'm going to own it and really be proud of who I am, my background, and what has led me to this place. So again, I want to welcome everyone to our afternoon session. My name is Tamara Fields. I'm a managing director at Accenture, and I am very happy to be your MC for this session this afternoon. I wanted to say again that we're very excited to support this conference. Anytime there is a conference empowering women, I am happy to be about that, right? I believe that we have to pay it forward, and it's important to encourage each other as women. I wanted to give you a little bit of background, and y'all know this is necessary for all sponsors, but I wanted to give you some background on Accenture. We are a global consulting company, aiding and helping clients in solving business solutions, staying market relevant, and also leveraging digital emerging solutions. But more specifically, I want to say that we believe that diversity makes us smarter and more innovative. Because of gender equality is a global business issue, and hopefully we all understand that today, right? The future workforce must be an equal one. It is an essential element to have an inclusive, innovative workplace, and it's key to competition. And that's been proven already. When you have a diverse workforce, you're typically going to be more successful and more profitable. We at Accenture have set a new goal to have a gender-balanced workforce globally, with 50% women by 2025. And we're very excited that we have that goal, and we are well on our way to meeting that goal. We have more than 160,000 women working for my company, 160,000. That represents more than 40% of our global workforce. So we're very excited to be a sponsor of this conference, and we're very focused on helping women achieve that goal, and we are very, very proud sponsors of this afternoon session. Today, I am really excited to have you guys here today because it's wonderful to hear stories of empowerment, but it's also important that we come out of this session really understanding tools on how we can do better in our careers and how we can expand and take ourselves to the next level. Take that leap, like Viola Davis said. And so today we have a really awesome person, Kelly Hoey, who is going to be your speaker for this afternoon. She is the author of Build Your Dream Network. And if you look in your book, you'll see a wonderful bio. But again, she was lauded by Forbes as one of five women changing the world of entrepreneurship. I mean, how exciting is that, right? I mean, how do you get to be in Forbes? I want to be one of five. I think that's awesome, right? In addition to that, right, as well as Fast Company says she is one of the 25 smartest women on Twitter. Wow, you're really smart. That is awesome. And Business Insider says she's one of 100 most influential tech women on Twitter. Now, that is very near and dear to my heart. I work in the tech world, and really, we need more women in technology, right? And so you're very fortunate to have Kelly here today because she is going to talk to you not just about how to take that next leap, but how to network, and not that traditional networking of just having a drink and getting somebody's business card, but really how to be a person of influence and a voice to be heard so that it can be impactful to your career and your business. So I'm very delighted to present her today. So here's Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to our fireside and our Q&A. I want to start this off, though, sort of maybe in good networking form by not talking about myself. But I will. I'm going to explain why I think it's pretty funny that someone with a law degree is smart woman on Twitter. You can imagine my parents are thrilled that that's where my legal education has led me. But I'm seeing some familiar faces from this morning, and I told them a story about hearing Glenda Bailey, the editor-in-chief of Harper's Bazaar, speak. And I shared one part of that story. And the first part of the story, for those who weren't at the Prudential breakfast this morning, the first part of that story was, it was a 7:45 in the morning, 21 Club in New York, networking power breakfast. traditional networking, as we would think of that word. And it was a bunch of New Yorkers, and it was post Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns and the recession and the collapse, and everyone was in dark colors. It's New York, we always wear black anyway, but you know, there was a little peppering of some other colors, but we were all very somber. There was not a lot of embellishment. And Glenda Bailey walked in, one of the speakers. And Glenda was wearing a jewel-toned cocktail dress. We're talking full rhinestones, bedazzled, at 7:45 in the morning. First lesson from Glenda, because someone did compliment her on this spectacular cocktail dress. And she said in her beautiful British accent, "Oh, I always dress ready for cocktails." Ladies, it solves every what do I wear question. Can I get a drink in this? When you look in the mirror, don't ask if it's appropriate. Just look in the mirror and say, can I get a drink in this? Yes or no? Doesn't matter. It all works. Here's the second lesson from Glenda, because she was asked what her greatest career achievement was. And here she is. She's the editor-in-chief of Harper's Bazaar. She had been the editor-in-chief of major British fashion magazines. You're thinking, found a supermodel, nailed a trend, whatever. Instead, she's told this story. She'd taken the job at Harper's Bazaar, and it was the first time she'd worked for a U.S. publication. In fact, the first time she'd worked for anything other than a British or European publication. And she moved to New York, and no sooner had she done that, she had to get back on a plane to London for London Fashion Week. And this was back in the era where the front row at a fashion show was filled with editors-in-chief of magazines. Not celebrities, not Kardashians, like people who like knew their job were in the front row. And the way they set up London Fashion Week is the Brits and the Europeans, those editors-in-chief, sat on one side of the runway, and the Americans and everybody else sat on the other side of the runway. So for the first time in her career, she's sitting here. Whole new perspective. And as she tells the story, she looks across the runway, and she sees a familiar face. So what does she do? She waves. And the entire front row waved back. And then her career hit her like a tsunami. She had mentored all of those careers. She had mentored every single one of those people who are now at the top job at all of those publications. So I share that story, and I think about it a lot. And it impacted me then, and it still impacts me every time I tell it. Right now, you're here in a session to learn about networking. Right now, you're in a session thinking about your career and your life, your business, your promotion. Maybe it's your not-for-profit. I want you to sit on that other side like Glenda did. And I want you to look across and think, all right, what is it that I want to achieve? And I want you to imagine that you've made it. Now, what's waving back at you? I was a corporate attorney for 11 years. Deal toys do not wave back at you. Prospectuses for billion-dollar deals do not wave back at you. People do. When you sit on the other side from your career, what's going to wave back? And what I hope we do in this session is really show how you connect better with other people, because that's what's going to get you where you want to go. And by God, that's what we want waving back at us, is other people. So my career, how the hell did this Canadian from Victoria, British Columbia end up on the stage in Austin? And the Forbes mention you gave of, you know, One of Five Women Changing the World of VC Entrepreneurship. No, my Forbes favorite mention in Forbes is they listed me as an up-and-comer at age 48. I'm 52 now. So never too late, never too late to all do things. So anyway, how the hell did someone from Victoria, British Columbia end up here and in all of those other things? Simple, people. My career, my opportunities are only explained by connecting with other people. Call it connecting, call it relationship building, call it networking. My first career was as an attorney. What's the lesson in all of that? Head down, work long hours. Yeah, I'm still doing that as an entrepreneur. But build your expertise. Understand why you're undertaking activities, particularly when you don't have a lot of time. I'm used to working 18-hour days. It's actually been the weirdest thing with being in sort of the writer now, where I could do something, you know, get a great idea, you know, write the three chapters I needed to do in my manuscript, and my day's over at 7 in the morning because I got up at 4:30 because I was really thinking about writing. And then I sit there, my lawyer brain kicks in, I'm like, God, there's a full day of work I could still do. But lawyers, those of us who are busy, we make excuses that we're not going to get out there and network. We're not going to get out there and connect. But you need to. It's your career. You need to put it out there. What's your expertise? So the long hours, not excuse for not networking. Not an excuse for not engaging with other people. Not an excuse for taking a moment and getting to know somebody else. So, lawyer for 11 years. A lot of relationship building. Made a difference. Cover of my book. Picked by a client. I stopped practicing in 2002. That former client picked my book cover because every year we get together for dinner. Or a drink. Or a lot of tequila. Depends on the year. 2001, I realized that working my way up that ladder, going for that brass ring, that corner office that I thought I wanted in my career, didn't want to do it anymore. And I began the journey of trying to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. And I say the journey, because part of the journey was the discovery, the career, Did I want to go in-house? No, I didn't want to go to another firm. So what about in-house? No, that wasn't it. I didn't want to go in-house. I wanted to stay in a firm because I liked the people I worked with. We've all been there, that thing that like run around in our brain. And when I nailed what I wanted to do, I really wanted to stay in professional services, and I really wanted to help other people with their career. Figured it out, exactly what I wanted. And then it hit me. I was looking for a word-of-mouth job. Most of us are looking for word-of-mouth opportunities. I was looking for a word-of-mouth job, and I didn't have a network to do it. And I was staying in the same profession. I was staying in the legal world. I realized what I had was a very narrow, deep network of attorneys and bankers, people doing structured finance. That's a fancy word for commercial mortgage-backed securities. I thought I'd try and slip that by you. I know, sexy stuff. I had a narrow, deep network. It was a great network. People who had my back, people who were mentors, associates I could call on to work on the most miserable deals because they knew I had their back and I was going to mentor them. Narrow, deep, fabulous network that, what? 12, 15, 16 years later, I can still call upon those former clients of mine and seek advice. You know, pulling all-nighters at the printers and doing a prospectus does have its benefits years later. But I didn't have this other network that is essential to all of our careers and ambitions, and that's the shallow, wide network. Women particularly have the narrow, deep network. Who's got your back? Who's the one who says, who's the person you turn to say, oh shit, bake sale tomorrow. Need your help. Oops, gotta put some costumes together. Who do you think you call? Who are the people who are the volunteers? Who come to your aid? That's when you have a narrow, deep network. People have got your back. But opportunities come from that diverse, broad, shallow network. Maybe it's a person you don't know so well. Men typically, the broad shell, I love saying it to men, you're shallow. Men typically have a broad, shallow network. For those of you who might have, you know, say boyfriend or spouse, and that time you're like, oh God, wish you had a close friend to talk to about this. That's because they don't have this network. They don't have that narrow, deep network that women typically have. Think about when you know when a guy says, oh yeah, I met him once, I'll go pitch him for business. And you're thinking, what are you doing? You barely know the person. That's where opportunity comes from. Think about your relationships over time, college, that first job. Maybe it was an old neighbor. Maybe someone you sat on a committee with. And there was a closeness for a period of time. And then there's been, you know, sort of like waves. Well, tide's gone out. And the relationship has gotten a little more tenuous. You got to pull on the power of loose ties. If you do nothing else after today, go and look at your own network. And if you don't have enough diversity in it, I'm talking age, gender, geographic location, industry, title, sector, interests. Start figuring out how you're going to start filling that in, because that's where opportunity comes from. So I spent some time building that new network. That took 18 months. We may have different tools now. That was 2001, 2002 to 2004 until I landed this dream job. But it took 18 months. And I stress this not to be like naysayer or negative. God knows I'm Pollyanna and I'm Canadian and we're all cheerful. It takes time to build trust. It takes time to establish your reputation. And that only happens when you show up and by what people see that you do. And not what you do once, but what do you do twice? What do you do three times so that I can vouch for you or I can bet my reputation on yours? So start building, you know, I say build it before you need it. Networks, build them before you need them. Because, you know, you can't just click, swipe, friend, follow, and then make that big ask for someone to expend their personal reputation. The good news is, particularly if you're doing, if people in the room are looking on a career change, you build that that network before you need it. Guess what happens when you land the dream job? You've got the network. That first 60 days, my new job, when I finally land on the management side, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was sure good to be able to call other people at other firms and say, how are you dealing with this? Do you have jerky partners that you have to report to? Thanks. You know, I had everything going. That was fantastic. I was also, for anyone in the room who is in a people function, for 5.5 years in law firm management, I was in a people function. Kelly, our people are our most important asset. Here's a paper clip and half an envelope. Go make it happen. No staff, no budget, but really important stuff. Everything we had to do. Not, and the lesson in all this, do not neglect your colleagues. Do not neglect your peer relationships. Oh, that's not my department. No, it is your department, because those relationships may be things that you need. And I was managed to get things done because my relationship with other people. Build the relationship across, I want to say, department lines, function lines. That's how I got things done for 5.5 years in a big firm. I also had to look outside again, because one of my roles when I was manager of alumni programs, that was a really one. When I went from having a staff and a budget after 4 years, worked myself up to a staff and a budget. Hey, Kelly, we got a new job for you. We're going to move you over to marketing. It's a global role. Sounds good, right? No staff, no budget, and I went from an office to a cubicle. The other lesson in all of there is, anyone in companies with 360 reviews? Have you done one? Or are you avoiding it? Okay, anyone who has the opportunity to do a 360 review, I want you to run towards it screaming, pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. Here's why. I did that, and it was almost at the exact moment that I was switching jobs. I know, because of that 360 review, I'm a really damn good manager. I just like getting shit done. I don't want to tell people how to do something. I want to do it. So going overnight from a job that had a staff and a budget and set programming that just needed to be managed to cubicle, no staff, no budget, and a really big mandate, my career happiness went up overnight. I don't now discount my ability as, oh, I wasn't good at that job or I didn't like that job. No, no, there was something that really filled my soul more, and that's doing and creating and building things. But when I was in that manager of professional development, or sorry, manager of alumni programs role, I needed to build an alumni program with no resources. So I needed to look outside, because any of my peer programming, whether it was talking to a McKinsey, whether it was talking to Deloitte, whether it was talking to another law firm, they had staff and budgets. I didn't have those, and that was not going to be an excuse not to get this done. And I got involved with a global business networking group called 85 Broads. And it was started by a woman by the name of Janet Hansen. Janet was at Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs' former business address was 85 Broad Street. So 85 Broads was her tongue-in-cheek poke to Wall Street that there really probably were at the time when she was on the trading floor at Goldman Sachs. There probably were only 85 members of Goldman Sachs anywhere that were women, and she started this informal alumni group. And it was fed and it grew because of the interest and the passion of the members. It was not reliant on big budgets and staff. And I'm like, there's my role model for what I need to do. So I joined that network. And the lesson for this for you all is you can sign up and show up, or you can sign up and show up. How are you going to show up? How are you going to get involved every day? Are you just going to sit there and say, why isn't someone delivering to me? I needed to understand 85 Broads, so I signed up and I showed up. I asked questions. I used the features on the website. I asked how I could get involved. I asked more questions. And that led to Janet calling me one day. And as I've already said, she was a Wall Street trader. So I'll say it nicely, otherwise I'll scare all of you for life. But she said to me quite directly, who are you and what do you do? Jesus, right? And I told her. And at the end of a 45-minute phone call, she said to me, would you think about coming and doing that for me? I wasn't looking for a job. I'd shown what I knew, and I was talking about something I was really interested in, and something that I had researched and spent a lot of time unpacking. How do we engage community? How do we get people to network? How do we create a strong network that can create opportunities that are beneficial for everybody? And I talked about it with her, and I had shown up and demonstrated my interest. And that led to a job that hadn't existed until that very moment. So I became the first president of 85 Broads. That got me out of the world of law firms, which is important because I had only seen myself in a very, let's go back to that narrow network. My career possibilities I'd seen for myself were, oh, I'll become a lawyer. I'll work my way up in a law firm. Oh, when that didn't work out, well, I'll move over to the management side because I know law firms. You know, and I'll work my way up as high in this law firm and maybe I'll just go to another law firm. Oh, if life gets really crazy, maybe I'll go to an accounting firm. That's the way I saw my life. So the other lesson in all of this with networks is stop and take a breath and pay attention to what your network sees in you. They may see more in you than you see in yourself. Listen to it. My boss, when I was manager of professional development, George Bell Timmerman Whitney. If you pick up a copy of my book and you look in the acknowledgments, he's pretty much number one on there. He said to me back in 2006, Kelly, you need to tell the world, you need to tell people what you do and how you do this thing called networking because you do it differently. And I looked at him, I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's like stupid, Tim. And 10 years later, I had to, well, we're in Texas, so it's a man from the South. You can imagine how painful that call was. A man from the South who knows he's right all the time. Oh, Tim. Anyway, love him dearly. He was quite surprised to find himself in the acknowledgments. Your network may see more in you. That thing you brush aside as flippantly as I did. Like, that's stupid. Like, doesn't everybody do it this way? Like, why would anyone want to hear on that? That may be your really unique contribution to work or life. That thing you just like, what do you mean? Everyone does it this way. They probably don't. Listen to that. If it is that thing you want to brush aside and you're like, oh, good God, you know, why do they keep calling me on that? Ask yourself what you're holding out to the world. What is your expertise? What is it you want to be known for? Are you networking the wrong thing to the world? Are you holding yourself out to do so many things that no one knows what to send to you? Are you holding out the one thing that you don't want to be called upon? Are you ignoring your talent? Or are you showing the wrong talents to the world? Think about that and how you're networking. So fast forward, 85 Broads blew my mind up royally, blew my world up royally in terms of what was possible for me, where I could bring my uniqueness. The next thing that happened was I did the president of 85 Broads for a year. When that was going to feel like a job, I had realized that was not for my world anymore. I was not going to have a job. I did some consulting work, and then I had a couple of women who landed in my lap because my name kept coming up. And that's when I became the co-founder of a startup accelerator. We invested in mobile and mobile-first investments that had a gender-diverse founding team. That's what's got me into Forbes. So the lesson in all that, and I sort of already hinted at that, like, what do you want to be known for? Where are you sharing it? Where are you talking about it? Who knows it? Because these two women had this idea for this accelerator, and they kept saying, we need to find a third co-founder. And this is the skill set we're looking for. And they started listing the skills. And what happened? My name kept coming up. We think of networking as a power imbalance. I'm here. I don't have the power. I need to network with someone up here. I have a need. I need a job. I need an opportunity. I need a new client. I need. And somebody else up here is the power to get it for you. That's what we think of networking as. We think of it as something we undertake when we need something. So we have to walk into a room with a bunch of people we don't know because we have a need. What I'm saying to you is switch it up. Change your thought process. Change the paradigm. You're always networking. You're always engaging with other people. You're always interacting with them. So how are you doing that? And I know Tamara and I are going to have a conversation. She's going to ask some more of these questions. So fast forward. All these lessons that started, you know, I was going to say here at 52, feeling like my career is just starting It didn't start when I was 21 and out of law school. It feels like it's just starting now, but I have the benefit of all these years to say, all these pieces have come together. And this is the part about what we're going to talk about today more, and this is kind of like sit-ups if you want that washboard stomach, or unless you wear Spanx, and that works too. But it's a repetitive action. And I've realized, hear how you engage daily, how you treat other people, how you hold yourself out daily, how you build your reputation, call it your brand, call it whatever you want, it's your reputation, how you choose to undertake activities. Because as like Viola said, she saw herself as that actress. What are the steps you're going to take to get there? By choosing to do all of that, and then doing it again, and doing it again. It's just like those sit-ups. My career keeps unfolding because I keep undertaking the same activities. Not damn luck, not serendipity. Only person I've interesting I've sat next to recently on a plane was a roadie for Anthrax returning from a tour, and that was the best 3.5-hour conversation I've had in a long time. Was sitting next to someone who's scared of flying, right? You're going to put yourself, for me, networking is putting yourself in front of the opportunities you want, because day in and day out, you're choosing to do that. Now, how are we doing on time? What do we got? When do we get tomorrow up here? How much more? You want to come up? Or you want to? What should we come up now? Well, come on up, because I know we're going to talk some more, and you're going to ask me some more questions. So, yeah, let's get into this, some of this other nitty gritty on networking, and because I even, you know, I've hinted at ways I think about it, but after the Pennsylvania conference room, they're like, you need to tell more of your story, and I'm like, oh, I grew up middle class in Canada and went to law school. Woo, that's remarkable and interesting, not.
So you know what?
But I think the only thing that's remarkable that I would want to say now is how I got here. Any and all of you can do it too. This was not a Rockefeller moment or, you know, like you said, someone picking me up. This is how do you deal and interact, and how do you invest in yourself every single day?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think networking is a hard topic. It's a topic that's often talked about. People say it like, you know, I'm drinking milk, right? People say, you got to network.
Oh, I hate that.
And I hate that term, right? I feel like that is so difficult. And so people will be like, need to go to a cocktail, you know, you need to go to this event, or you need to join this organization, right? I think what's the struggle for me, and what I would really like to hear from you, is when you very first meet somebody, what are you thinking about? How do you have that conversation with them? Is it a story about yourself? Is it asking about them? Like, what do you do to create a connection?
So let's back up. Here's what I think networking is. Every single human interaction. It's not just a cocktail party. It's, if I go and Google any of you right now, what do I find in that Google search? What does your LinkedIn profile look like? Where'd you choose to sit today? In this room or any other room? Who'd you talk to? Did anyone leave an out-of-office voicemail or email message? What did it say? All of that, to me, is networking. A committee you choose to be on at work. All of those activities are networking. So a better question is, where do you start networking? What's your goal? What's your purpose? What do you want to achieve in life? Where do you want to go? Start envisioning that and start breaking it down. We get things done with the help of other people. Don't start thinking about networking by the activity. Oh, you should be on Snapchat. Oh, you should go to this group. Oh, you should. Quiet that voice. Or quiet those voices who tell you to do those things. And jump back over here and go, where am I headed? What's my goal? What do I want to achieve? Now, who are the people who can help me? And where are they hanging out? Do I need to send them a text? Or do I need to talk to them at a cocktail party? Do I need to finally join that networking group that everyone's been telling me to go to? That's the way, for me, that's the way I break it down. As soon as someone says to me, you should, Kelly, oh my God, this is the greatest group, you should. I'm like, who's got like 2-year-olds in the room? Okay, what do 2-year-olds do? Why? That's the voice in my head. And when someone tells me you should, I'm like, tell me about it. What makes this conference so good? Which sessions did you attend? Tell me about the other. Hey, like, I unpack it. How much time do you spend on that committee how much time do you spend on that board as a board member? What does that involve? Because somebody else's success with a group or an activity, you need to understand their engagement to figure out how it works for you. We're each unique, our goals are unique. Our ability to participate is different. How are you engaging, or how can you engage? So, you know, set your goals. Break it down. Who are the people you need to connect with? Now, where are they hanging out? And I do that every single time.
So, you know what I think I heard in that conversation is really two things. I think the first is interest. Mm-hmm. Interest in what somebody has to say, mm-hmm. and really listening to what they have to say, and then probing in on that interest, mm-hmm. in that whatever connection conversation that you're having with someone.
Right.
But the other part of that was, you know, what are your goals? It's hard to know your goals if you don't know who you are.
Right.
And you don't know what it is you represent and your skills and where it is you're trying to go.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting to me, if I look at who you are today and then the lawyer, wide leap there, right?
Well, I mean, different stages in our career are different needs. I mean, there was a time where I needed to learn how to be a really damn good lawyer.
That's right.
And I needed to network with partners in a firm because that was the network that was going to feed me work. Yeah. And I needed to build relationships with my clients or the firm's clients because they were the ones who were going to feed me work. Also, there was that one time period where it was like really buckling down and learning your craft. And for some of us, that's networking we need to do. Some of it may be I need to learn a new group, or I need to learn a new skill set, or I need to, where can you double down? But start with it, with where your goal is. And your goals are going to change. It's not just some big goal that's amorphous. It's like, break it down. Let me make it like a real concrete example, because let's just pause for a second. I have to eat my own dog food, ladies. You write a book on networking, you're gonna follow your own goddamn advice on a daily basis. So I'm telling you what I do, because I do this. When I decided I wanted to write the book, first thing was, well, where the heck do you start? It was like, literally, it was like, blah, 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 right? I always start things with my network. So I was like, okay, where do you start with writing a book? Probably a book proposal. Maybe there's some, you know, do I need a literary agent? What happens with, is there some publisher I could go? So I made a list of 3 people, 2 who had recently, one was working on a book proposal, one was in the process of finishing a book, and then another friend who is with a publisher. I started with them, and they said, this is where you start, and by the way, here's my book proposal, use it as a roadmap. The other one said, I'll edit it for you. The third one said, yeah, you can go to publishers directly, but get a literary agent. I'm like, good. What's my second piece of my goal towards getting my first goal with getting the book published or wanting to write a book, my first goal was, where the hell do I start with this process? The second was, all right, now that I know I have to do a book proposal, let's get that in shape. Oh, third one is, I need to find a literary agent. And each time I was finding and pulling on, what's the information, who are the people who can help me? And if they weren't directly in my network, right, then it was like, great, where do I find them? But it was all very, like, you could have your big goal, but then have your narrow slices. Think of it like football. You got that big end zone goal down at the other end. What's your goal on the way? Just get me a first down. Maybe I got a second down, but you know, let me get a first down so I can keep moving down that field. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to pull on the field to help? help you along. Every once in a while, we can throw a Hail Mary and get a touchdown. What happens most of the time? You got to call in special teams, right? Something goes wrong, right? You fumble, you got to start again, you move back. But figure out each time how you're going to move forward and chunk it down into smaller goals and move up that way.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. One of the things I think I would point out, and it kind of goes back to your earlier comment of when the person walked in the room and she waved and she recognized all the individuals in the audience. The reality was she had mentored them.
Right.
And then another point that you said earlier when you were on stage is, you know, pay attention to your peer relationships.
Right.
Pay attention to those underneath you. Pay attention to those above you. And I think that's another really important aspect, right? Because even when you were talking about, I'm going to start this book project, who do I know? It all comes back to the people that you know in your lives. And every person that you're working with, individuals that you're dealing with in your organizations, they're all connections.
Right.
So you can't ignore them.
It's an example of networking. So there might be people in the room who are thinking about crowdfunding a project. Spoiler alert. Crowdfunding is networking. It's not marketing. Strangers don't give you money. Your network does. Mm-hmm. Everything you're doing right now in your career should be starting with the people who already know you. They're the ones who already can vouch for how you're going to show up, how you're going to deliver, who you are. And I think we overlook that with networking. We also, and you've hit on it, you know, mentoring. Who's got interns in their company? All of that stuff, that's networking. Start thinking 360, not this power imbalance of I'm here and they're up there. One of my greatest opportunities this year was speaking at Google. How did that happen? Summer intern from 4 years ago who now works at Google. An intern. And we've stayed in touch. So if you're in the room and you're younger and you're like, oh, Kelly, this all sounds terrific if you've got experience under your belt, what do I have to give to someone else? You've got your time. You've got how you show up at work. You've got being grateful for opportunities for people to help you out. And maybe sometime down the road, you'll do like Abby did for me. You'll be able to deliver up something. But, you know, and for people who are, you know, like me, okay, there's gray hair there, but I'm trying to cover it up. Those of us with gray hair, you're thinking, well, what? You know what? The next person you report to might be some, 25-year-old who interned for you, who's now got the startup and knows they need you because they need your experience. I've already done that. I've already had the 27-year-old boss. So all these relationships, all of these things. So for those who think I don't have time to network, you're already doing it. You've got a digital footprint. You're probably working in a team. You might be walking into a co-working space and talking to other people. Make those little things you do every day really matter. And it doesn't take much, that littlest bit. But I do want to hit on something you said, because there are going to be the networking. You know, when we hear that, and we imagine walking into a room having to talk to strangers. There may be people who came here alone, not with a group of friends or colleagues, to this conference. You may be walking into a cocktail reception by yourself. Here's what I want to say to you, a couple of things. One, understand why you're choosing to be somewhere when you're going to walk into a situation like this. Why did you choose to be here? Was it to get information? Was it to hear a particular speaker? Was it curiosity? Damn it, that's a really good reason to go out and do something. I'm just curious. But understand why you're walking into the room. How does it relate to your goal, where you want to be headed in life? Because then you're not walking into the room going, oh Jesus, why am I here? We've all had the moments, I said this earlier today, the moments where you walk into a room and you're really glad you have that smartphone to stick your face in, because you don't want to talk to anyone. But know why you chose to walk in that room, because it makes the decision to be there easier. Here's the second thing. We're all frightfully worried about how we're going to enter into conversations and what we are going to say. I want all of us to make a commitment to change that. I want you all to start thinking now, how am I going to bring people into conversations? If you're at an event and you're with somebody else and you see someone else, how are you going to bring them in? How are you going to see and hear them? And if we start doing that, I think it'll make it a lot better for the rest of us. And I really started thinking about that, like, really passionately. And God, at the startup world, that word is so overused. I'm like, slap my, if I was in the startup world, we play like sort of bullshit bingo when people use like all the buzzwords all the time. I would be so getting like the bingo for using the word passionately from my friends. Anyway, I think about how we pull people into conversations a lot because I spoke at Yale Law School earlier this year. And a student came up to me to ask a question. So this is Yale. This is like the best of the best of students who are, you know, pursuing legal education in this country in terms of intellect, the ones who go off and are, you know, Supreme Court clerks and all the rest of it. And this young man wanted to know what he needed to do to change, to network better, because he's deaf. And he takes, law firm recruiting involves cocktail parties, noisy, crowded spaces. And he needs to take, in those situations, he needs to take, and because multiple people talking, he needs to take an interpreter. Those of us who are not dealing with hearing issues, what do? Well, we've got an interpreter there and a deaf person. We talked to the interpreter. Yeah. He wanted to know what he had to do. And I'm sitting there looking at this kid going, what do I have to do? What do you have to do? What do people like me have to do to hear you? How are we overlooking talent and opportunity because we're so worried about what we're gonna say rather than saying, what can I do to hear other people? So start doing that. Look around when you're at an event. Who can you pull into a conversation? When you're in the position to plan an event, what are you doing so everybody can be heard? I typically now ask, I'm not one for PowerPoint, much to the pleasure of our good friends in AV. They're like, yes, no PowerPoint. There's a PowerPoint with a visual in it. So I said, everything you do is networking, including giving presentations. Ask if someone's got a visual impairment. Because if you're showing a visual that's important, if you're showing a video and they can't see it, you're leaving them out of the conversation. If you do a cocktail party, next thing, you're going to start thinking about all this now when you walk into these types of events. You're going to be, damn it, Kelly. think about when you go to a cocktail party, what do they have? A bunch of high tops. What happens if you're on crutches?
So, you know,
what happens if you're a little person, right? Like, think about these things. How can we bring people into the conversations? All right.
Absolutely.
So my soapbox on this.
So I'm going to say a couple of summary points, but we really want to open up to the audience to allow you guys to ask Kelly some questions. But a couple of things that I do think we heard that are very, very important. I think first is you do need to know your story. You need to understand your value, and you need to be able to speak to that. I really love the second part of hearing the other person, thinking about the other person, thinking about the individuals around you in whatever circumstance that you're in, whether it's at work, whether it's a networking event, that every conversation matters. Mm-hmm. And that every person in that conversation matters, and really concentrating on hearing what they have to say. And if you focus on the other person, then you're not focusing on your fear, right? And your inability to talk. And I really think that's very, very powerful. But at this time, we really do want to open up to the audience and allow some questions from the audience. There are two mics on either side. Do we have anyone that would like to ask Kelly a question?
So, and I'm going to give a, okay, so real practical networking here. Say who you are,
okay,
and where you work or who your company is, because now you're going to network with the entire room. So I can get all woo-woo and emotional on some of this stuff, but I can get real down and dirty and practical on some of this networking. So number one, this is the one time in life, ladies, you need to nail your elevator pitch. No pressure.
Okay. Hi, my name's Jessie Coulter. I do marketing for Big Red, the soda. You might not know of it. And I also have been a blogger for 7 years, so I'm covering this conference as press. But my question is, what if you have companies in mind that you are you have goals for, you know, positions in the future you'd like, but you don't know anyone there, and, you know, you want to reach out to certain people, you know, within that role or that area, and you know, but you don't have any, like, that first down. So how do you reach out, you know, without, you know, I want to be sincere. Like, I do want to create a relationship. I just want to be like, hey, can we have coffee? And then, like, you get me a job, you know.
God, if it was only that easy. Listen, let's all admit this. The number one problem with networking is we have to deal with other people. And we're complicated and messy, and so are they. So this is also, too, there was a session earlier today, I know, in the exhibit hall on LinkedIn. This is the beauty of platforms like LinkedIn. You can see who is connected to who. So if there's companies you're interested in, whether it's for a job or for business, follow them. And it's going to then show you whether or not you have a first or second degree connection. Go that route first. Warm introductions are key. Everyone is like, I think Google, they were advertising positions, and I noticed and paid attention to it. This was like, know anyone here? Because how can we vouch for people? You know, someone says, yeah, they may not have it, but they're really great. Go after that person. So first, look for the warm introduction. Okay. If you don't have that, you've got to go, you're talking flat out cold. Do your research. Do your research. Why do they want to talk to you? What's their need?
And when you're asking, I mean, even if you have that middle, you know someone, you have a connection.
Give them explain why it is that they need you. You know their industry, you know how it works, you know what the opportunities they're facing. You can stand in their shoes and say, and I would say this if it was sales as well, why they want to talk to you. Jessica Peltz is one of the case studies. So my book is very case study driven. And Jessica Peltz is one of the case studies, and she graduated from in an MBA program, thought she was going to get a job in Chicago, fell through. She's like, damn you, Chicago, I'm going to New York. She knew no one. Getting a job on Madison Avenue, 2001, 2002, when jobs sucked in New York, post 9/11. And what she did was she did old-fashioned research, and she would say she'd do the same thing now, though she has the electronic tools. So she bought Ad Age, and she bought every single publication. She understand when job opportunities arose because of market conditions. And in that business, it was when an account changed hands. And she watched where the account went, she figured it out, and she customized every single cover letter and every single outreach. And you can say to me, Kelly, that takes time. So does sending out 50 cover letters and not getting a response. Sending out 5 really focused, like, answers, right? Instead of, if we spend this much time, it's like for everyone, you spend this much time networking. Most people spending this much time researching and this much time running around. Flip it. Spend more time using the information that's out there and sitting back and saying, right, where does this lead me in terms of the outreach? Where does this lead me in how I should spend my time? And maybe I think about this because of my original career in law. Critical thinking, problem solving. That to me is networking. Hopefully
awesome.
That
Thank
helps.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I know I'm going to get like this warning sign from...
You are. We're getting close.
So here's the deal. I'm still into old-fashioned networking, which is business cards. I got a stack of them down here. I will take every single question. Please email me and put in the subject line, Texas Women's Conference question. I will personally answer every single question. Solemn commitment to all of you. If for some reason we run out of cards, kelly@jkellyhoey.co. Or you can go to my website and you can like hit the little form. You'll get me. I will answer every question. Okay, we're gonna go boom.
Yeah.
Hi.
My friend from this morning.
Yeah. This is Angela. I work at Omicron and Packworld doing sales, marketing, and a variety of other hats. But my question is, we always talk about networking and making contacts, but how do you manage your contacts. I mean, even in LinkedIn, you have LinkedIn, you have people from other places. How do you manage, like, who you know where and why you know them or what they do or whatever? Because I don't really we don't really always talk what people do. I have friends for years, and we're just friends. We never talk stuff. But how do you manage that? Because it's really a lot of people that you know over the years.
Yeah. I wish I had a really good answer for that one. I got, an envelope with some business cards in it, like a lot of them. Here's what I would say. I use LinkedIn heavily. Facebook, thank God, I'd forget everyone's birthday if I didn't have that. Twitter's my ultimate jam. That's my cocktail party. There's a variety of sources. But for me, this is where, as I said before, I think of networking is critical thinking and problem solving. The next time you have a need for something or someone asks you for something because they want you to give them an answer, spend a second thinking about how your brain works to problem solve that. So I typically go, if someone says what the challenge is, if it might be, I may go company and then I go geography. Then I may go think about relationship, but there's a waterfall as I start to problem solve it. And that may start giving you an indication of how or where you need to organize or file or systematize how you network, or sorry, how you maintain or manage your network. One thing I do every day on a to-do list is I have a random catch-up. Like literally I have a note to randomly catch up with someone. It probably says that, randomly catch up with someone. And I force myself to sit down and think about somebody else who I haven't talked to in a while. I'm gonna take that opportunity to say this. Number one networking mistake is the failure to follow up. I talked about this morning. If you do nothing else from today, okay, I'm gonna give you two things to do. One, go and look at your calendar. I don't care if it's the last week, month, year. Pick your time period. Find someone to follow up with. And I don't mean the, hey, thanks for lunch, or thanks for the ticket, or thanks for, we're in Texas. You people are polite. You know courtesy better than anyone else. Okay, maybe someone from North Carolina may dispute that, but screw them. Your barbecue's better too. All right, so. Here's the deal, find someone, when I say follow up, you probably said, hey, thanks for the coffee date. Thanks for taking time to mentor me. You probably sent that note. Have you followed up to tell them what you did with that advice? Have you followed up to tell them how that meeting was that they set up? Did you follow up and let them know that that meeting led to a job or a client? That's the follow up that makes the difference, and that's the number one networking mistake. The second thing I want you to do is Google yourselves. What's showing up, and are you showing up the way you want to show up?
So let me just add two things to that, because I think that's really important. What I do, just because I'm very busy, right, is I add a calendar entry to follow up. So I'm big on calendar, right?
Yep.
So I will, beyond I send a thank you note, right, I will put a note in calendar for X amount of weeks, however period of time I think is appropriate, and I'll say, you need to follow up with X person and do whatever. Follow up on whatever they told you, et cetera. The other is I take all business cards and I put them in my contacts. And in the notes, I put how I met them, where I met them, and what we talked about, and any information that they gave me. Now, that requires you to do that immediately, because if you wait 5 days later, you're not going to remember, right? So from a session like this today, right, say I just met, right, Kelly, I would have been on here, was with Kelly, sat on a stage, talked about X, right? She had funky shoes on, right? And I would include that in my notes because these things trigger my memory, right? I have to have, love these shoes, by the way. They will trigger my memory. So I look for a defining thing in an individual that will trigger, and then I include that because that also helps along with LinkedIn. Because you seldom remember how people look always, right? But the two together are a nice combination.
Or take that and say, right, when you're reaching out to someone did that with me. It was like literally 3 or 4 years later, and like, we were at, and you said, and I was wearing, and I'm like, that sounds like me. I would have done that, yeah. So I probably was there, yeah. All right, let's take one more question, and then I'm gonna add one more comment, and then my handler in the front row is not gonna strangle me. Okay.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is John B. I'm a product manager at IBM. My question specifically is about networking in a workplace that's becoming increasingly virtual. Like before, you know, you were co-located and you had chances to have these water cooler conversations, or there were lots of events in the local space. But now that lots of people are working remotely, and really the only interaction you have sometimes is that one meeting. Right. I still try to make time to set up, you know, follow-ups to talk about something. I think we have something in common. But what do you do in that situation to really, you know, build the breadth of network as well? Because you run into people who do the same thing oftentimes.
Right. Fantastic question. This is where you realize that internal wikis and networking, you know, or Slack or something like that, those are networking. It's not just a technology tool to get something done. And how can you engage on that and realize that that is networking? This is where you take advantage of technology instead of saying, heck, let's get off of the Slack channel and let's get on Skype. Let me see your face so we can really resolve this. This is where you choose committees or volunteer projects so you know intentionally you can work with other people than the ones you see or virtually see every day. And this is where you pay attention to when are people working in one place and go and do that. I needed to go and do that, you know, I would say when I was in a management role, because there was a lot of people in other offices who had an effect on what happened with what I was trying to achieve. And if I got the notice that they were going to be in the office, damn it, I was there and sought them out. So you're asking the question, which is a brilliant one, because you can put yourself into the driver's seat on this. Intentionally, walking down a hallway, sitting, if you have an open, we're creatures of habit. If you're sitting in a, you know, unassigned office, you probably go to the same seats with the same people. Shake it up. Shake them up, go sit somewhere else. Go and do that so you can intentionally, but see where there's chances, particularly volunteering or committees. That's a really good way to get to know other people. And also realize that, you know, one face-to-face meeting in some ways may be all you need, because now the nuances of an email, a text, a Slack channel, it all starts to make sense once you know the personality.
So everybody, I hate to tell you guys, the session is over.
Okay. Yeah, so business cards are here.
Yes.
Secondly is I'm running to have to go in and do another event, but my calendar, you know what, frees up in an hour after that. And I am more than happy to meet with anyone. Hit me up on Twitter. More than happy to meet with you then.
Yeah, she'll be doing book signings in the exhibit hall right after this, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we give her a round of applause?
Thank you.